ACC Nation Podcast, Episode 45, January 15th, 2017.
This podcast is part of the Blueberry Network, where listeners and podcasters come together. Find out more at blueberrywithnoes.com.
Thanks for letting us join you. Chris Bond in Tampa, Will Ogenen in Minneapolis, and I'm Jim Quist in Richmond. New day, new hour. A little later in the show, we're going to be taking a look at ACC basketball. We'll talk a little bit about indoor track and field. That's underway, and we've got some rankings for you. The MLS draft for men and women. ACC looking pretty good. First, we're going to check in with the guys. Let's go to Will and find out what's been going on the last couple of days. Some exciting stuff, and I know where you've been hanging out, man. So, I mean, you don't even need to throw that in there. I know you have a bunk bed set up at that place. Okay? So, go ahead and admit it.
I can neither confirm nor deny those allegations.
I know who can. So, they're already taken care of.
I was there. I was there Friday afternoon after work to knock back a couple of my new favorite beers, the Black Velvet Nitro Stout that they make. Which, as I was telling you guys through our infamous message thread, how much I'm falling in love with nitro beers.
Yeah. I was gonna get into that with you a little bit there. Lot to be said for nitros. It's just so much smoother and. It adds another layer to me, or maybe it removes a layer. Who knows? What do you think?
Yeah. Like they have two beers there you can do nitro with, that one and then their Dark Side of the Moon Porter, and both of them actually taste much, much better with the nitro in there. Just makes it take away a little bit of a layer. That smoothness you refer to just makes it for a much better beer. I think that's why those are my go-to beers right now.
Yeah, I would say anything that's a porter, if you're going nitro, you can't go wrong there. I just think it makes it a much better beer, a much better experience, and something that you want to come back for more. And I will say this, that I think that's a great way to introduce people who are not big fans of dark beer to dark beer. And to really enjoy, and Chris probably can get into this a little more, like anything that's like a coffee chocolate sort of combo. I just think it makes it much smoother and the flavors come out. So that's me, you know. So
yeah, no, it's definitely. I think the Black Velvet, like I said, it's a milk stout. It definitely, that nitro definitely gives it a much better flavor even, and a better taste to it.
I can't go wrong there. Not at all.
Definitely. I should add, too, that we're about to get hit with another snowstorm where we could see up to 3 inches of snow plus a little bit of ice, too. That'll make for some fun driving on Monday. Oh. Luckily, I only drive 5 minutes to work and home.
That's enough usually there. 5 minutes can be a long trip in the ice, for sure. Yeah. So be safe.
I remember one of my last jobs, I drove 30 minutes to work, and when it would snow like this, that drive time would double, definitely.
And everybody just naturally assumes that when you live in the north where there's a lot of snow, that things go smoother with travel, and it doesn't. I mean, that's just not the reality.
Like, you got people who certainly know what to do during the middle of a snowstorm, but you got these people at the same time who are all about themselves and don't care for anybody else, who, you know, like to just think they own the road. Next thing you know, you see them down the road in the ditch. And you can't help but give them the Nelson months. Laugh at them as you drive by.
Oh, boy. let's jump on down the road here to Tampa and find out what's going on with Mr. Bond.
Hey, Will, none of those cars in the ditch would happen to have a Virginia tag, would they?
Not going to happen, buddy. Never gonna happen.
Well, you know, I've got my own Ball Man Brewing. We call it Four Stacks down here. Stopped by their place on the way home from work Friday to pick up a couple growlers. I picked up a Martin Warrior Hefeweizen, just a really nice, light, easy beer for dinner. We had with a with some linguine and sauce with a eggplant parmesan perfect pairing on that, and had a also got their chocolate coffee porter, which is a little heavier, like a 9.7 APV, but perfect after dinner brew to just wind down and start the weekend with.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have snow down here, as you might imagine, but we sure certainly have plenty to shovel.
You
do have snow, but we won't get into that.
You got plenty of things to shovel. Hitting it right on the head. In so many ways. Well, let me ask you about, I noticed that the picture of the cans of the beer that you were consuming, your personal favorite, beer in a can or beer in a bottle?
I'm a traditionalist, so I prefer it in a bottle, but more and more Florida breweries, at least, are going to can because mm-hmm. It protects the beer longer from, light is just bad for beer. It's just bad.
Mm-hmm. I've heard it's also cheaper that way too.
It is cheaper that way. Absolutely. So, it's like, how some wine enthusiasts are upset with wineries going to plastic corks and screw tops, but it actually does preserve the beer better, that way. So, a little bit harder to get for my board of my map of Florida and the United States where I fill in bottle caps. So made it harder.
Trust me, I have a one of those beer maps from Minnesota, and I maybe have 10 of them, and not all of them are from Minnesota.
And you know what's funny, Will? I knew you were getting that before you do it. So.
Yep, I remember that.
That doesn't surprise me.
I actually have one from Devil's Backbone sitting in there right now.
Well, there you go. See?
There you go.
You might not.
A lot of shows don't take anybody.
Did
so.
You? Well, that was proven with me walking in the door. Did you get that before me or after the Devil's Backbone?
That was from my trip.
Okay. So that was a more recent one. All right.
Yeah.
Very good. A lot of other good product coming out from them. One of the things that I've seen around here with craft brewers is, and this has been going on for years, mobile canneries. A lot of the I think this is a smart thing. Whoever started these up, wherever they started them from, going around and servicing the craft brewers rather than the craft brewer having to put in their own line until they get to a certain size. It really doesn't make sense financially. So somebody started a mobile cannery. So they just go around and they on a regular basis, they can the product. I think that's a pretty neat thing. So what? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say those cans that you saw there, Jim, actually, Four Stacks is brand new. They've only been in business since August, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And those cans, they can it right there when you order. They're called crowlers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. And you pop the top just like you do any other can, but they fill it up right there out of the tap, and they can it right there in front of you in those big 32-ounce cans. So a lot of breweries are getting into that, especially your new ones who don't have the canning assembly line, as you say there. Others are going with those mobile canneries. I've seen that. So there's a lot of real creative ways for new breweries to get their product out and for new ways to get them serving their clients.
That's what it's all about, getting it in the hands of the consumer.
So, yum, yum.
Yeah, that's right. Sounds good. Hey, let's start talking a little bit about what's going on in the ACC, guys. Talk about first the MLS Super Draft. There's another part of this. It's actually coming up on the 17th, which is Tuesday. And let's talk a little bit about the ACC men's soccer players. There's 7 first-round picks and 12 overall selected in the Major League Soccer Super Draft in L.A. Friday. The 7 first-round picks is the second most in the ACC's history. 12 drafted is more than twice as many as from any conference. And that's probably not all that surprising when you think about what a season the ACC has had. And we'll just take a look at some of these players and where they went. And, Will, I'm going to let you jump on this first round, and we'll talk a little bit about maybe some of these players and the programs.
Definitely. Hey, you mentioned it. In the ACC soccer was very strong this year. Unfortunately, it fell short of the ultimate goal, but still nothing to be ashamed of. But yeah, the ACC was well represented in the MLS Super Draft. Number 2 pick overall was Miles Robinson of Syracuse, went to the Atlanta United FC. Duke forward Jeremy Ibobisi, it went forth to Portland. The Chicago Fire took Daniel Johnson from Louisville at 11. Sporting Kansas City took Colton Storm from North Carolina at 14. Zico Lewis from Boston College went 17th to the New York Red Bulls. Right behind him at 18, Ja'Cory Harris of Wake Forest went to FC Dallas. And at 21, Brandon Aubrey from Notre Dame went to Toronto FC.
Let me just stop for just a second. And one of the reasons that we're naming off the teams here, and you know, from most people who are not soccer aficionados, especially at the major league level, I think it's important that everybody know the names of these teams, because these are players that were providing some exciting action in the ACC and college overall, and these are guys that we ought to be supporting as they go on to the next level. So knowing these names of some of these MLS teams is a great thing, and maybe folks who are supporting these college players are going to go on over to the MLS and support that as well, because I think that'd be a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
Chris, and I'll come back to you here in just a second, Will. Chris, if you would please run down the second round players that have gone in the MLS Super Draft.
Well, the first one that caught my eye immediately and is, you know, Mr. Alec Farrell of Wake Forest, and we knew just in the title game, his effort to keep put Wake Forest on the brink of bringing it home, not quite, but the spectacular effort he made in that game was only just one sampling of the great year that he had and what he's going to bring right in there. He's going to shore up a defense immediately there in Minnesota. And Will, you're going to get a good look at him right there here locally for you. And, you know, any sport that I follow, guys, you know that I'm partial to defensive side of the ball. I like close games. I like competitive matchups, and I think great defense provides that. So, you know, when has in soccer, has in hockey, the guy at the very end of the goal, he is the most important man you build from there, and he's a great piece to start with up there in Minnesota. So I envy Will to be able to see him and develop in his professional career. You know, Liam Callahan, you know, out of Syracuse, and a great defender, probably a bit unsung over the season. Didn't get a lot of press, and not really from one of the strongest teams in the ACC, but it's still a very good team if they had been put in any other conference. And maybe he might have gotten more press out there, but, you know, Colorado got a fine, fine defender in there out of him. Chicago, again, going to get another good goalkeeper. This league was stacked with great goalkeepers. Stephen Cleveland is going to also be a great start for them to shore up that back end there, keep them, because they gave up a lot of goals this past year, and that was certainly a need for them. You know, and Philadelphia getting another defender, Aaron Jones, and then Walker Hume out of North Carolina. Those guys are great for their hustle. They work hard. And they're going to be fun to watch. And again, want to see them develop. And very proud that we saw them in the beginning, because I think all these guys have great potential for great careers.
So these guys have gone to the Minnesota United FC, Colorado Rapids, Chicago Fire, which is one of my favorites, obviously, Philadelphia Union, and FC Dallas. Those are just some of the teams. That's the first and second round look, and let's pop back over to Will and some thoughts that you may have on either continuing on that first round or second round of the players who have been drafted.
Yeah, I was just going to make a point, too, about the expansion of the MLS. As the Minnesota United FC is actually an expansion team for 2017 in the MLS. And they're going to be the Minnesota United FC has actually been a local soccer club that's played here for a number of years, playing up in Blaine, Minnesota, up on the north end of the Twin Cities. But they got their MLS expansion chance this year, and they're going to get a new soccer stadium. I think they're going to play there for a couple of years before the stadium is built. But yeah, this definitely will pique my excitement for MLS. I can't say I've watched many games over the years, but I'll definitely give it a chance with a team locally.
This is definitely an opportunity for you to get in on the bottom floor here of things and get season tickets and maybe get locked in there, Will. So just a thought. You know, I'm going to throw that out at you. Chris, any thoughts on the first and second rounders, you know, in addition to the folks that you were talking about just a moment ago?
Yeah, just in the sheer numbers of the quality that were that the ACC is sending up to the next level, you know, these guys are all very good students and good citizens, and we, you know, they make a great representation to us. But the overall picture here, you see so many of them coming out. As you said in the very beginning here, Jim, it's not really a surprise how many ACC players are drafted. The league was stacked. So many ranked teams that we had means we had so many great players contributing to all these great teams. And the fact that professional soccer has looked to the league, to the ACC, and especially in Will's case, you're starting with a great player for a new franchise up in Minnesota. This is no surprise at all, and I really think this is going to be just the start of it. I think this is going to be a trend for years to come.
Led by a player out of Duke, the ACC contributed 10 student-athletes in the 2017 National Women's Soccer League College Draft, which was also on Friday in L.A. And Will, go ahead and run down these players for us, if you would, please.
Yeah, there was one player in the first round taken. It was Christina Gibbons, of the midfielder from Duke, went number 5. In the second round, ACC had two players taken. Tony Payne of Duke is going to join Gibbons in Kansas City. Also, Claire Wagner of Clemson is going to play in North Carolina. She was selected in the second round. In the third round, we've got Kaylin Sheridan, a goalkeeper from Clemson, to the Sky Blue FC. Also joining her, Katrina Tanda of Clemson, a midfielder. Kansas City took Alexa Schaefer of Virginia, also in the third round. In round 4, the Sky Blue FC once again took Mackenzie Meehan of Boston College. Washington took Cameron Castleberry of North Carolina. Seattle took Kristen McNabb of Virginia, and Haley Dowd of Boston College went to Boston in the fourth round, so she gets to stay home.
Of course, and here's another great lineup of players and a lot of very familiar players when you were running down that list. Going to teams, the NWSL in Kansas City, North Carolina, Sky Blue FC, also Washington, Seattle, and Boston. A lot of great teams out there. And again, can't encourage you enough to go support. If you were supporting or you had any kind of experience with college soccer in the ACC, these are the players that you should continue to follow on into their professional career and support them. Any thoughts on some of the, you know, the draftees there, Will?
I was going to make a point, too, if those of you who are wondering about Sky Blue FC, that's actually located in Piscataway, New Jersey.
Gotcha. It sounds a lot better to call it Sky Blue.
Yeah.
A little shot there across the bow. Anyway, you know, Chris Christie just put a hit on me. So, Chris, let's talk a little bit about some of these young ladies who have gone on over to the pros.
Well, Jim, that mark was put on you many years ago, I'm sure, so I don't think it's anything new.
It's just who gets to who first is all I'm saying.
That's what it's all about, certainly. Yeah, that last one, Haley Dow, she'll be probably kind enough to fill out the change of address form for her teammate there, Mackenzie Meehan, going down to Piscataway down there. So, no, this is very strong on the ladies' side as well. And I'm looking at both of these leagues here, and I kind of envy you guys, Jim and Will, to having soccer clubs in that area so you can continue to follow these players, male and men and women alike. And because we just don't have that here in Tampa. It hasn't gotten a hold real here locally. We do have local soccer clubs, but nothing that's generated any interest for getting an expansion for either of these leagues. So I really envy you guys in that regard. But not surprised at all there. But I think Claire Wagner out of Clemson is going to be a nice pickup for North Carolina. She's going to be I think she was the best defender in the league that year, but statistically, because on that back end there, North Carolina was very tough. Number one in on goals allowed, and that actually is not just a reflection of goalkeepers, but it's good and good defense women in this case, supporting those great goalkeepers.
Well, that's a great look at MLS and the NWSL and all the college players coming out of ACC soccer heading on to the pros. Some excellent action coming up. I'm really excited, looking forward to a lot of the play that we're going to be seeing more and more on TV, as a matter of fact. The ACC leads all conferences with 11 schools ranked among the top 50 of the Learfield Sports Directors Cup Final Fall Standings. That's nothing to sneeze at. 7 ACC member institutions rank among the top 25, which is quite incredible. It's tying for the most of any conference nationally. Clemson's 2016 football national title highlighted the ACC's fall sports success, along with NCAA runner-up finishes by Wake Forest, as we just mentioned, in men's soccer, and North Carolina in field hockey. You know, we always talk about Whit Babcock, who's the athletic director at Virginia Tech. Well, they've just added something else into their lineup of coaches that will definitely make an impact on how volleyball shows up at Virginia Tech. And I would say within a year or two, probably two, because it takes a little while before this for the recruiting aspect to start kicking in. But Jill Little-Wilson has formally accepted an offer to become the head coach at Virginia Tech for volleyball. She was an integral component of the LSU program, which was always in the NCAA tournaments. She is, there was, the recruiting coordinator, which is a very important point to bring out here, is that here's the key to bringing in a lot of quality players to LSU. She's going to take that, add it on top of being the coach, and watch Virginia Tech. I'm going to say about 2 years, because I don't want to throw a year out there, because it's kind of ridiculous. Sometimes you can turn programs around quickly, but this is going to put Virginia Tech right in there. And again, this is one of those moves by Whit Babcock. Any thoughts from you, Will?
Yeah, another strong hire from Whit Babcock. I mean, Wilson has some experience in the ACC. She was actually a assistant at UNC from 2002 to 2004, and at Wake Forest in 2006 when they actually tied a school record for wins. So she's no stranger to the ACC. Like you said, she's, you know, was a recruiting coordinator down at LSU for many years, and, you know, helped bring in a lot of quality talent in LSU. And yeah, she was actually an LSU alum, so she pulled it right out of her alma mater to coach there. So I think this will be a really good hire for Whit Babcock, and will provide a big boom to that Virginia Tech volleyball team.
Chris, you have 2 cents to throw in there as well?
A dime or a nickel, probably, actually. You know, don't go so far these days after what you spend on beer. But, you know, some coaches are better for recruiting, and some better are coaches at working with what they have. She is stronger in both. There's not really a glaring weakness in either way. She's fantastic recruiting, connects well with the new kids, and develops the talent once she gets them on campus. So the two keys to coaching: finding a talent, getting it on campus, and developing the players and putting in position to win on game day. Or a match day in this case. Babcock, no surprise here, another great hire, but this is still impressive in the sense, as Will pointed out, you're hiring them away from their alma mater. That's always quite a coup to pull out off. But, you know, you got somebody who, as Will said, no stranger to ACC territory and ACC competition. And volleyball could use some upgrades in our league. That's it. We talk about how the sports that we're strong against end. Volleyball is something I certainly would like to see some improvement, and Babcock certainly is, with this hire, making the statement that they want to help the league push that in the right direction.
I'm going to make a pitch for Whit Babcock. Not that he needs it, but if I were at Virginia Tech, with what Whit Babcock has brought to the table, what he continues to do, and how he's building the program, I think I would be looking at getting this man a nice salary increase to keep him in place.
Oh, he's got to be on some list somewhere. He has to be.
You know, he's a target. He is a target. I mean, I can't even imagine. Hey, if I had an opportunity to hire him away, I'd be jumping all over that. He has really contributed an awful lot to building Virginia Tech's sports programs up, and he just amazes me every time that something happens down there. I just keep looking at who's behind it and who's involved, and there you go. There's Mr. Babcock.
You have to know the next Ohio State, the next Michigan, the next big program looking for an athletic director, he's got to be near the top of the list.
One of the things that helps Virginia Tech Hokies out a lot is the New River Valley is a beautiful place to live. It's a great place to raise a family. To have that big of a program sort of plop down, and I'm not going to say it's the middle of nowhere because it really isn't. It's a fairly well-populated area. It's a great group of people who live there. Easy to get around. You don't have a lot of crime and et cetera. So that keeps a lot of really top-notch people in place because they like that environment, and I don't blame them. Well, Deshaun Watson, the All-American quarterback for Clemson, has been selected as the 2016 winner of the Manning Award. That's presented by the Allstate Sugar Bowl to the top quarterback in the nation. He is the very first repeat winner of the Manning Award. Any thoughts on Deshaun Watson and this additional tip of the hat to the young man? Chris?
Another award for Deshaun Watson. Is there enough hard work for this young man? I'm not sure. This is just special. I was rewatching the game again last night. I couldn't help it. When you see great moments like we just did for this past Monday night, you want to take them in as much as possible. You know, I just don't think there's enough plaques out there or enough trophies to land this young man to display the greatness and the impact he's had on not just the Clemson program, but as ACC football as a whole. He is truly one of the all-time greats and a good person, the term that we know. But he's very unassuming in his interviews. He takes everything upon himself, and he rose to the occasion last Monday night. As we knew he would. He took a couple heavyweight punches to the mouth, took some big hits. Guys, he stood in that pocket, and he took some shots that a lot of quarterbacks would have crumbled under. And the pressure on that stage certainly would have put away a lot of great players. But this is a special player. He is above the moment, and he made the moment. So an award, I'm sure he's very humbly grateful for this award as he is for all the others, but I don't think any award really can be given to him to justify the impact he's had on the people around him and on this league. So good on Deshaun Watson for the award, but we would have been proud of him anyway.
First repeat winner of the Manning Award, Deshaun Watson of Clemson. Will?
Yeah, I can't believe he's the first repeat winner of that award. You'd figure there have been a lot of great quarterbacks that have come through, and you would figure at least one of them would have won it another year. But, you know, it's another piece of hardware, like Chris said, to add to the trophy case. Unfortunately, there was one he almost won but didn't. But I'm sure if they would have had Heisman voting, you know, later into the year, maybe after the season, he probably would have won it. But He finished second, which shows you he was, very well thought of in circles around the country. But it's not surprising he won this, given how great he played, especially in the second half of the year that season went on. He played much, much better. And he's going to turn that into making a lot of money on Sundays here coming up in a couple months.
Speaking of which, he is ranked as the number third potential draftee among quarterbacks for the NFL, and that probably will change once he gets into one of the camps and does his thing and shows people what he can do. I have a distinct impression he's going to move up the ladder. Right now, Mitch Trubisky from North Carolina is ranked at number one, which I have a lot of issues with. I don't have issues with Mitch Trubisky as a quarterback, but I think 1 year is not enough to be ranked number one in that position for potential NFL draftees. That's just my thought.
Jim?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
How do you like the idea of Watson in a Chicago uniform? How would you feel about that?
I would take Watson, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think that I think he'll be nabbed by somebody earlier. Just to go off track for just a second, on one of the forums that I get in and talk about Chicago Bears football a little bit from time to time, one of the things that Chicago needs to do is to build their secondary and then their offensive line and then a quarterback. And so if you get into the second round and you have somebody like Watson still available, I think I would go for him in a heartbeat. My thought is number five, Brad Kaya from Miami, is on that list. I say he's still there by the second round. I think that's who Chicago is going to take, but that's just my thought. Anyway, let's move on to U.S. Track and Field Cross Country Coaches Association Top 25 for men and women. Let's talk a little bit about their preseason poll. We have a couple of teams in there on the men's side, and let's run down a couple of the teams. Well, the action is just getting underway, so it's interesting. I will say this, just for the preseason poll, and we won't see another ranking until about the 23rd here, Florida is number one. That's really not too surprising considering what they've reloaded with. But Will, go ahead and tell us the teams that are from the ACC on the men's side for track and field, indoor track and field, and let's see how many teams that we stack up here.
For sure. Yeah, number five, Syracuse is sitting there. Chris Fox, you know, his 12th year at the head of Syracuse track and field. He's doing an amazing job and figures to do that again this year. Down a little bit, we've got Virginia Tech sitting at number 16, Virginia behind them at 19. And that's it.
That's it. Okay.
I thought there was another one, but I
I actually did too for some reason. I was waiting for that next one. That's why the pregnant pause there. But those are the teams right there, and I don't think that's too unusual. Syracuse, Virginia Tech, and Virginia, the three teams in there. Let's go on down to the women's rankings with Chris. Number one, Oregon. Now that should not be a surprise to anybody who keeps an eye on track and field. That is like the world of track and field out at Oregon. But let's take a look at who else is on that list in the teams from the ACC on the women's side. Chris?
Yeah, no surprises. Number one on the women's side again there, Jim. And also you might notice they are number two in the men's side. You know, it really helps when Phil Knight is one of your alumni. So that doesn't hurt at all, does it?
And
not at all.
And just
not
tell
at all.
Just so that people who don't know who Phil is, go ahead.
Oh, I think he signed some guy named Michael Jordan back in '85 to a shoe contract.
Uh-huh.
And
a little swoosh.
Things took off from there. Yeah, indeed. We digress. But as we move on here to ACC here, we do have Notre Dame checking in as the highest ranked ACC team at number 9. Alan Turner coming back here with after a number 5 finish as the head coach there. We move down to number 14, Miami, no surprise there. Indy Demon, their 27th season. That's has the elder statesman, I would say, although it's not polite to talk about a lady's age, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But she certainly has earned her respect for 27 years of great coaching. That is the point of that. Right there. But moving on down to NC State, right back there, Roddy Greiger, even longer, 33 years in track and field coaching. And again, one of the great teachers out there out in the track. And as we move on down, that is it, what we got from the ACC right now, although I would expect some other programs like Florida State to make some noise down the road here. So track and field, one of my sports from high school, I was certainly a sport I love following. When the Olympics come around, I'm glued to that television, especially in my events, the shot put and the discus come out. So I'm also always partial to the field part of it, but you know, we got some great track programs in the ACC, and we're going to have a lot to talk about this season.
I think that you will see a couple of extra teams in the 25 mix here in the next couple of weeks as things get underway. And as you mentioned, Florida State, I was kind of surprised that they weren't in this preseason ranking. By the time that next ranking comes out, the 23rd or the one after that, I would imagine we'll see a couple more ACC teams popping up on both the men's and women's side. A lot of great talent there. And as you mentioned, Chris, I love the running part of it, but also the field performance. You know, there's so much talent in the ACC. Some people who are highly ranked, a lot of players who have who do well for their country. They come from Europe and a lot of other places, Australia, and go to ACC schools. And they're some of the top performers in the world. And so, you know, if you're going to go see something that's really interesting, especially if you want to, you know, a family friendly environment where you're going to see a lot of different performers that are just fascinating, I always encourage people go to a track and field event. You know, that, you know, an indoor, especially, they don't have to worry about the weather or anything. But once it gets warmer and they go outdoors, it's even better, as far as I'm concerned. But
exactly, Jim. We got the world's talent here, right here in the ACC. So
indeed,
if you got a chance to go see a track and field event, any one of these meets here, your local ACC school, go and see it. You're going to see some of the best athletes in the world.
Any further thoughts from either one of you guys on ACC indoor track and field? That's our preseason look at the top 25. Let's just jump right into this, because now typically we record our program and we have on Tuesday nights. That sort of allows us to take a look at the AP poll on basketball. We don't have that luxury now because we have moved to Sunday. This allows us to kind of collect a wider variety of sports for the entire week. So what we're going to do is be looking a little bit at the AP top 25 for the men and the women here, and then talk a little bit first about how some of these teams perform. Now, some of the key games that turned out to not go the way that maybe some people thought they would. Back on Tuesday, January 10th, Duke at Florida State, that didn't quite go the way that people thought it would. And Saturday, on January 14th, Duke at Louisville and Florida State at North Carolina, two big games that had a lot of potential for determining which way we were going to go in the ACC, and this is for the guys. Next Saturday, the 21st, Louisville at Florida State, and that's going to be a real barn burner. But let's talk a little bit about some of these games, guys, and how the top 25 is going to be shaken, not stirred. Number 7, Duke, who is at the top of the ACC list, can't be there any longer, guys. I mean, it's not going to be there. Now, the question is, we have number 7, Duke, number 9, Florida State, number 11, North Carolina, and then number 14, Louisville. And the other two teams are number 19, Virginia, and number 20, Notre Dame. Will, let's talk about this shakeup, because it's coming. It's coming.
Yeah, definitely, especially with Duke losing twice this week, getting just handled by Florida State. And I wasn't surprised Florida State won. I thought they would, but by how badly they won was a total shocker. But I think that's that was a game they definitely missed Emile Jefferson in. Just that lack of inside presence, veteran inside presence. He just was hadn't have enough good veteran bodies to stop the guys like Jonathan Isaac, or even go out and defend the Dwayne Bacons and the Terrence Manns of the world. And with that lack of front court depth, really, or veteran presence, really showed up in the Louisville game, because then Austin Mahmood went off, had a double double against them, and probably played one of his best games of his entire career against Duke. We mentioned Florida State; they lost their first ACC game to North Carolina, and I watched a decent amount of that game. It just felt like after North Carolina started off pretty hot, I think they started off like 7-0, and then even though Florida State got back up and, you know, occasionally had a lead, just felt like they never completely recovered. North Carolina might be the top team in the ACC going into the next rankings. Virginia got a nice win over Clemson on the road. They might move up a couple spots. Notre Dame is probably the biggest surprise to me. I didn't think very highly of them this year. I thought they would probably be in the tournament, but probably towards, you know, towards the play-in game type. But sitting at 5-0 in the ACC after beating Virginia Tech, and boy, you know, Mike Bray, his team's just, they're so good at shooting the basketball, and That's what keeps them in games, but they never shoot themselves out of games. Really, their players are just really good at getting good quality shots and, you know, hitting them at a pretty effective rate.
A very focused team. That's one of the things I always take away from Notre Dame's basketball teams. They just are so focused and intent, and I think that comes across in their wins and their close losses as well. Also receiving votes, number 30, Virginia Tech, and number 33, Clemson. And that's part of the reason why we're mentioning, not only because they played, but because they're ranked, or they're outside the top 25. But nonetheless, that 30 and 33 ranking, whoever they're playing, whoever they're winning against or losing to, in this case, the Notre Dame-Virginia Tech game and the Virginia and Clemson game, these are points, man. These things count toward how you're ranked and how you move up. Chris, you have thoughts about the 25 action that we had this past week in the ACC?
Well, I got to tell you, I was going to big tip it to Captain Notre Dame, Mike Brace team. I think he's got a tree in his backyard where he just grows shooters and he picks them off whenever he needs new ones.
That's every year. We'll have to check. It's called a money tree.
Yeah, you know, it's like, yeah, you lose guys like Collison and Grant, and you just, it's like, nah, they're just going to slide. Where are they going to find a point this year? And, you know, all of a sudden you see, Steve Ishura, Matt Farrell, Bonzi Colson, all these guys showing up, and they're just scoring points. And guys, you know, they won five games now by a total of 23 points combined. And they're doing it, I tell you, if you look at the highlights, guys, in the last 2 or 3 minutes of each one of these games, they're doing it with defense. This is not necessarily Mike Braid is an offense-first guy, but, man, they are getting big stops down the stretch. And if Notre Dame, with all their ability to score and shoot themselves into every game, if they're starting to play defense and start getting more stops, I mean, that's going to be a big difference in this league. They're number 20, they're moving up. And I if they keep the trends the way they are, I don't see the top 10 out of range for them here in the coming weeks. Now, overall, we talked about this last week. Yeah, this is going to be a constant state of flux. We've got so many great games every weekend that you're going to have teams rise and fall throughout the year. Now, a couple back-to-back losses for Duke. Yeah, you're right, Jim. That can't hold. They're just going to have to drop. Florida State will probably lose a couple spots for that loss there of North Carolina. Although I got to tell you, North Carolina pulling out that win, being undersized, that may have been the first time in Roy Williams' career he's had to put in such a small lineup. Especially when Florida State's got a 7'1", 305-pound center, Michael Ojo. Watching that game, yeah, I got to give mad kudos there to Pinson there, Theo Pinson, who was only about 210 pounds, and he wrestled a rebound right out of Ojo's hands. So to out-rebound FSU with a small lineup by 15 boards, that's an impressive victory. I don't care what the name on the jersey is, but I don't think this would be a punitive loss to Florida State. They'll may lose two or three spots is what I'm expecting. Virginia, that was kind of a surprising where they gave up 9 straight points to Clemson there in the stretch. That's certainly uncharacteristic defensively. But kudos, by the way, to London Parentes. He showed up early so he could see the parade for the Clemson football team. He wanted to take that in and support them and congratulate them on making the conference shine. So saw that there. He made that trip extra early for them, and very, very sportsmanlike as well before he led his own team to the downfall of the Clemson basketball team. Yeah, by the way, Clemson, I'm not sure if we're going to see any points out of them in the poll next week. There seems to be a very bad trend going with them right now. Very disheartening start for them at 1-4 in the conference. Mm-hmm. You're wondering what's going to right the ship there out of Western South Carolina.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that it's going to be righted, to be quite frank. I've always been questioning how much depth they have. And I'm not sure they have enough to really make the difference. Let's see what you guys think. I'm going to present some scenarios here and see if you say yay or nay, you know, agree or disagree. Will, I'll start with you first.
Nay.
That was pretty easy. let's start with this premise. Number seven, Duke drops down out of the top 10 altogether. Yay or nay?
Yay.
Okay, Chris.
Yay.
Okay. I think that both Florida State and North Carolina are going to be in the top 10. Chris, yay or nay?
Nay.
And who would you say is going to drop out of the top 10?
Florida State. They're at 9, as I just forementioned, maybe 2 or 3 spots.
Okay. Will, your thoughts on that?
I agree with Chris. I'm saying nay.
Okay. You think Florida State, too, is going to drop out of the top 10?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Louisville. Let's say that I'll say that they stay in the top 15, so I don't see a whole lot of movement there. I think Virginia gets back into the top 15. Will, you think yay or nay?
I say nay. They're going to move up a spot or two, but not to the top 15.
Chris, your thoughts?
I'm right there with Will. I'm going to say nay.
All right, we'll stick with you, Chris. Notre Dame moves up into the top 15. Yay or nay?
Nay for now.
Okay, Will.
I'm going to say yay.
Okay. Now, our receiving votes teams, number 30, Virginia Tech, and number 33, Clemson. I will say that Virginia Tech will probably drop down about 5 notches. Not that I think that that's the most accurate reflection of their team, but I just think that's the way it's going to go. Probably at like number 35, let's say. Will, your thoughts, yay or nay?
Yay.
Okay. Chris?
Nay.
Nay? You don't think they're going to drop down that low?
I don't think so.
Okay. Clemson, I think this will be a lot easier for everybody. If they're still in the RV, we'll say that they'll go from 33 to about 40. What do you think, Chris?
Yay.
Will?
Yay.
Okay. All right. Let's move on over into the women's basketball category. On the poll this week, it's number 6, Notre Dame, number 7, Florida State, number 9, Louisville, number 12, Duke, number 14, Miami, number 15, Virginia Tech, number 23, NC State, and receiving votes, number 26, Syracuse. So, Will, any thoughts on basketball action from the women in the ACC this past week?
Yeah, one thing I wanted to highlight this week is Syracuse's Alexis Peterson scored a school record 45 points against NC State on their win over NC State on Thursday night. And this right here might be reason enough to put her atop the Player of the Year category. She's actually having a pretty amazing season, leads the ACC, averaging 24 points and 7 assists per game, plus second in steals with 3. I think I know I was down on Syracuse, you know, at the beginning of the year, especially when they were still ranked, when they were a game above 500. But now they're tied for first in the ACC. They are, you know, starting to creep back up in the polls, and Peterson has a lot of the reason to do that. Also, Virginia Tech suffered its first loss of the season this week to Miami. They hung in for a while, but fell in the end. Right now, the standings are Florida State, Notre Dame, and Syracuse all tied for first, with Duke and the aforementioned Hokies also have the same amount of losses but have fewer wins at this moment.
And I want you to admit to this, okay? Are you ready, Will? You're mentioning in the last podcast that Virginia Tech had an undefeated record is the cause for their loss to Miami. So go go ahead. You put the curse on the Hokies, all right?
Admit it. I'm not going to go there.
Chris, you got any thoughts on women's basketball action?
Hokie fans, should we remind you that Will has many Virginia T-shirts in his closet? So
well, now we know.
And a Frank Beamer voodoo doll.
Dude, you need to stay out of my house when I'm not here.
He's just looking for your stash of beer.
Well, no, it's not in my closet.
Maybe missing a few bottle caps on his map.
Chris, your thoughts on women's basketball?
thought. Okay, yeah, okay, yeah, basketball.
Pretty
yeah.
well put, Chris.
The night laugh.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to go ahead and talk about that Virginia Tech-Miami game. That was one of the more entertaining games I've seen in a while. It was interesting to see Virginia Tech get behind and find a place where they were not going to win the game the last couple minutes. I wanted to see what the character of this team was down the last couple minutes when the game got away from them, because this is a team getting used to success. But the hard part about getting used to success is getting used to the occasional failure, the occasional shortcoming. And when the game was getting out of hand, sometimes you see these teams who are in those positions, things get chippy. It's not going to be their day, and there may be some acting out. This is not the case for Virginia Tech. You don't normally want to have to just give kudos to good character. It's kind of you want to expect that. But, I think this a little bit of a shout-out, even though it's a loss, I think it's also a quality of why they won so many games up to this point, that they just played hard all the way to the end without going over the line. They gave it their all right to the final buzzer, and that just, maybe it's overstating something. It should already be there, as I said, but I just was impressed by that. And you don't see often very many chances to see a team's character in adversity. This is just one loss, in a program that is clearly on a big upswing. But I just wanted them to get some kudos. For right there, and they're going to win a lot more games down the road, guys. And Miami certainly is no slouch for program. They're another quality program in the ACC women's side of hoops. Good character and their first setback of the year, and we look forward to seeing them grow from the setback.
Let me run down the teams, and let's find out what your thoughts are on this. Notre Dame, at number six, when are they going to get back into the top five? Will, any thoughts?
It feels like, well, when you lose to UConn, you understand it, but that loss at NC State is must have held them back a little bit. But they've responded pretty nicely. They've won four in a row since, blowing out everybody they've played. Actually, just coming off a win over Pitt, where they won by 32. If you want to get a chance to see them, they'll be on ESPN2 on Monday night as they travel to Tennessee to take on the Volunteers. We'll see what happens there. I mean, Tennessee isn't obviously the program it was under Pat Summitt, but still will be a highly publicized game for the Lady Irish.
And your thoughts on Notre Dame, Chris?
Well, just keep winning. As I say, we will here. You did one four in a row, and they won them by sizable margins. And you're going to continue to have opportunities here. Tennessee is the name that's next on the schedule, though it's not. I don't think it's going to be the resistance you would have gotten during the past summer's years. But, you have games against North Carolina and Duke coming up. Duke on the 26th. So we'll see how... Jim, all the lauding you've been getting for Duke here, that's going to get put to the test there. Getting back in the top five, as long as you keep winning, it's really up to other teams dropping in front of you at that point. But we know their quality. We know their top five team. We're just talking about the rankings here. So I don't think it'll take any time at all. Probably in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
A little bit of a log jam with the likes of Notre Dame, Florida State, Louisville, Duke, Miami, I think actually might get their way into the top 10. I'm not sure about that. Like I said, it's a log jam. Now, I tell you what I think is going to happen, unfortunately, for Virginia Tech. I think they're going to drop down. If they're at 20, they may be lucky. That's just what happens when you get dinged. North Carolina State and Syracuse, I think, flip-flop. I think Syracuse makes their way back into the top 25, and NC State drops out and gets into the receiving votes. Mm-hmm. That's, again, a gut feel. So
I'd agree with that. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yep.
All right. Well, we have come to the end of our time, guys, and any final thoughts, Will?
Just wanted to give a couple of football scheduling updates. Boston College is going to play their game against UConn this upcoming season at Fenway Park, which will be a fun event to see a football game in such an historic ballpark. Also, it came out this week that Virginia is going to play Georgia in the Chick-fil-A Classic in 2020. And usually those games are pretty high profile and, you know, you a lot of hype for it on Labor Day night. But, they're hoping Virginia is actually going to be much better in 2020. Otherwise, this game doesn't look so good.
I think you can say yes, they will be. I would say by then, Bronco Mendenhall's recruiting efforts will have paid off. So, Chris, any thoughts?
I personally would like to know, were all those people who hashtagged a year ago, fire Ham for Florida State or firing Coach Hamilton? I would like to know where you people are at. Do we need to send out SEAL Team 6 to find you?
Dude,
because you have completely disappeared off the Twitterverse.
You are talking about people who are hiding under the bridge, okay? Those are the folks who come out from the bridge, under the bridge, and go back under the bridge when they're proven wrong, which usually takes about all of a couple of seconds for people with any thought pattern to make
happen.
Well,
we know the five-letter description for them. I'm just saying, you know.
I'm going to have to think about a little further for some additional five-letter. Anyway.
I mean, come on. You look at their record right now. This is about the best season in Florida State history, and here's why. Hamilton has built his career at Oklahoma State, Miami, and then now at Florida State. He had been recruiting athletes and coaching them to be basketball players. He coached a lot of length and height in there, but not really as far as the skill. He was just getting him on campus and teaching him, and that kept him competitive in competitive games. But he never really could turn the corner. Now I think he's seen the light the last two or three years. He's recruiting basketball players now with Xavier Raython Mays, Wayne Bacon, Terrence Mann. These guys are basketball players. They were born to play on the hard court. And you can see the difference in the program. He's applying he was always a great coach, but now he's applying it to players who actually already have the skill set coming on the campus. And you're seeing a huge difference. But back to my original point, Florida State is not a destination job for basketball. It just isn't. If Leonard Hamilton walked away tomorrow, the best you could hope for to hire is somebody who's a mid-major coach. Because I will say this, looking around at other places in the conference, Florida State has the worst basketball facilities in the ACC. And we have some good ones. We have some great ones. Fantastic. And there is certainly an effort and some movement being made to upgrade those facilities in Tallahassee. But Coach Hamilton is doing a job where he doesn't have as much available to him in resources as, say, Krzyzewski or our friends in Chapel Hill or Bennett up in Charlottesville. He's going head-to-head with these guys and bringing in great players now and doing it with less. So all you people that are out there for Fireham, you did it without any knowledge of what was going on. And you stay under the bridge, as Jim says, because that's where you belong.
Well, my final thoughts here, I want to give some shout-outs to the following teams that are doing really well in wrestling. Number 5 in the country, Virginia Tech. Number 10, NC State. Number 23, Pitt. Number 24, Virginia. Here are the top-ranked wrestlers in their weight class. 125, Joey Dance at Virginia Tech. Number 133, Dom Forres at Pitt. Number 144, it's Kevin Jack at NC State. Number 149, Solomon Chisco at Virginia Tech. And number 157, it's Andrew Atkinson at Virginia. At 165, Tashawn Campbell at Pitt. At 174, Zach Epperly at Virginia Tech. At 184, Zach Zavatsky at Virginia Tech. At 197, Jared Holt at Virginia Tech. I hope I got that right. And heavyweight Ty Walls at Virginia Tech. So you can see why Virginia Tech is ranked so high. That's going to do it for us. Until you hear from us again,
school
plunger.